because I can lip read. I could see Nicola saying, "Sorry, Rebecca, John's looking at me." And yes, I was looking at her because I want to talk to Rebecca immediately. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, John.
The story that you and your colleague Victoria O'Regan wrote about Bonginkosi Madikizela not having the BCom that he has claimed for quite a while now that he did earn has led in the immediate present to a suspension and possibly more than that to come. What alerted you to this?
A tip-off, John, and that's actually partly what I wanted to address. You know, there's been these pervasive suggestions on social media that this story is part of a factional game being played in the within the DA, that this is a strategic move to get Bonginkosi Madikizela out of the mayoral race so that Helen Zille and John Sienhazen's favorite, Jordan Hill Lewis, can ascend to the mayoralty without trouble. That is as may be, as they say, John. All I can say is that the tip-off we received did not come from within the DA. It did not come from the city of Cape Town. It did not come from anyone linked to those institutions.
You can be sure of that.
I can be sure of that. And obviously, if it had, we would have treated it in an extremely circumspect manner because I'm not stupid. And I am an experienced journalist and I know how these games work. So, yes, it may be being used as part of a factional game, but to the best of my knowledge, it was not planted as part of a factional game. But what I want to know, John, is, you know, separating out these things, now Bonginkosi says, I take responsibility for not having updated my CV, which, by the way, is really a very disingenuous way of phrasing what has happened here, because Bonginkosi Madikizela, as far as I'm concerned, lied to my face on the phone. I said to him, sir, I'm just trying to find out, from where did you get your BCom human resource management? And he replied, from UNISA, 1999. I mean, that is the occasion at which I assume somebody who realizes there has been a gigantic misunderstanding in the public domain would say, oh, hold on, I don't actually have a BCom in human resource management. Be that as it may again, John, what I have not heard in all the talk of suspension, et cetera, is whether the DA or the City of Cape Town is going to launch some kind of wider vetting process. Since it is Helen Zille's extraordinary claim that back in the dark ages of 2009, nobody was vetted, everyone was taken at face value, you could put whatever came on your CV and nobody would check it. At what point then, because she says vetting qualifications was not at all routine then, at what point did it become standard within the DA? And shouldn't we go back and just have a wee gander at everyone else's CVs before that point? I mean, there just has been no sense that there should be a kind of wake-up call within the party or the institution of the City of Cape Town. I find that a little bit strange.
Well, maybe there is that wake-up call, but for reasons that I'm not able to determine, they're keeping the wake-up call silent.
That could be, and in that case, I wish them well, because I would suggest it is something they should get onto prontissimo, perhaps led by someone who actually does have a degree in human resource management.
Sanction? I mean, do you have thoughts on what would be an appropriate sanction? He doesn't seem to have shown any inclination to resign, as many of his political opponents are calling on him to do.
Head scratcher, John, because as I said to Kino the other day, in these qualification scandals, the normal narrative is that the journalist phones and says, we're on to you, mate. And then the accused person says, oh my God, this day has come. I'm so ashamed. I will fall on my sword. I resign. As you say, there's absolutely no indication that Mr. Madikizela is going to do that. I find the suspension of 2 weeks to be quite odd in terms of the period. I understand it's for the investigation. I'm not sure what there is to investigate, but I understand that they need to follow due process. It's unfortunate. The whole thing is deeply unfortunate. And I also want to make clear, as a journalist, one derives absolutely no pleasure from this kind of reporting. At least I do not. But I think that if the DA is to be true to their principles, then they are going to have to let Mr. Madikizela go. I mean, the stink they have caused over comparable scandals within the ANC and government suggests to me that there's simply no way forward unless they want to be accused of the most egregious double standards.
Because his answer to your direct question in a telephonic conversation with him suggests that it was put there by mistake. What should have been put onto all of the material to which is now being referred back was an incomplete BCom, that was a mistake which, if I'd been made aware of it earlier, I would have corrected earlier. That seems, at the moment, to be his defense.
Yes, but, I mean, as I just said, it is implausible to me, because I directly asked him, where did you get your BCom? And he replied, UNISA. Only about 6 hours later, during which period I can only imagine he was mulling it over and becoming progressively more stressed, did he suddenly send me a text message saying, whoops, my CV should say unfinished. That story to me is highly, highly implausible. Of course, I don't have any way of saying that's definitely not what happened. But as I said, when you directly asked, where did you get your BCom? Surely at that point you say, hold on, I don't have a BCom.
Yeah. I'm talking to Alan Windey just after 5 o'clock, talking about COVID matters, but I will also ask him about what they need 2 weeks to investigate. The man said he had a qualification. He doesn't. What's the investigation? So I'll ask him about that. Science, moving on to something else, Rebecca. Science finally admitting that women can have children after the historically long-accepted cutoff age of around 35.
So if you're 35 and pregnant, up to today, practically, you would have been told that you are having a geriatric pregnancy, which is one of those delightfully sexist medical terms that just makes women feel amazing, young, nubile, wonderful. Because the official reproductive years for women, and those are, of course, in which we're useful to society, have been said to stop at age 35. This has now changed. They've upped it to stopping at age 37. And as Awa Madawi wrote in The Guardian, welcome, because the medical establishment and wider society has acted as if women's fertility falls off a giant cliff at 35. And that's it. If you haven't had kids by then, well, God be with you, because, you know, you are taking on a massive risk to yourself, to your health, to your baby's health, etc. And nobody is saying that it isn't harder to carry a baby to term after your mid-30s. That's definitely true. But it is not as hard to get pregnant as people think. And a lot of this has been based on very outdated research. In fact, Awa points out one of the most cited stats is actually from the 1700s in France, some kind of medical record. Utterly insane. In a more recent study, that is, say, in 2004, 78% of women aged 35 to 40 who were trying to get pregnant conceived within a year. But the converse of this, John, is men. Because there's no sense in society that men have a biological clock, that men should stop trying to have kids after a certain age. And yet, as Madawi very memorably writes, sperm does not age like a fine wine. Men contribute to around 50% of infertility cases as they age. And studies show that babies born to older fathers have increased likelihood of health issues, cognitive issues, psychological problems, all sorts of things. And we simply never, ever talk about that. No one says, oh, Alec Baldwin, you are 63. Should you actually be fathering 17 kids with Hilaria Baldwin? Might they not perhaps bear the brunt of that? That's not to say that older men can't have children. It's to say that, as usual, there is a double standard.
I don't wish to undermine or disagree with what you say, other than to say I have had debates about what age it is prudent for men no longer to decide to have a child. They might be able to, in terms of sperm production, be able to father a child until their 70s and 80s, but at what point does it become sensible not to utilize that sperm because you're too old to properly look after the child? The child is inevitably going to lose you at a significantly earlier age than most children want to lose their fathers, and so on.
And, John, that's all valid, but I feel that that is the only conversation we have, the one about will you be young enough to bend over. We never talk about the actual effects on the fetus, the babies, that older sperm will cause perhaps a constellation of other issues.
And then a listener sent me a judgment by the press ombudsman, and I forwarded it on to Rebecca. And it is a judgment in a complaint that a reader of Rapport, Elizabeth Pretorius, made first to Rapport itself. It was dismissed by the internal ombud, and Ms. Pretorius then took it to the press council, and they ruled in her favor. And she was objecting to a headline of a sports article written on the 21st of February this year by Louis de Villiers. And the title of that article is Rugby is saier as TV sonder titties. Rugby is more boring than TV without tits, is the translation which is used in this press council ruling. Rebecca, I spoke to quite a few of my Afrikaans-speaking colleagues, and they all say that boobs is a closer English equivalent of the Afrikaans titties. And rugby is more boring than TV without boobs is somehow to me less offensive than rugby is more boring than TV without tits, which is, I don't know why, I find it a very crude and unpleasant word. Your thoughts on this?
I mean, I think I agree with you on that. Yes, I think that there's something more, I don't know, less brash about the word boobs. I find boobs utterly ridiculous as a word. I mean, it's like that calculator game. It's such a juvenile word for breasts. But I mean, I was very interested in the ruling, John, because of the initial dismissal of the complaint by the internal ombuds at Rapport on the basis, for instance, that everyone has breasts, so that is not a sexist term. I mean, I completely agreed with the complainant, Miss Elizabeth Pretorius, that a headline like that is premised on the idea that women don't watch rugby, for instance. The idea that the ideal viewer of rugby wants to see titties. I haven't read the article, but I take it that was the premise, that without that rugby is becoming as boring as a TV show without tits, without boobs. I apologize. You know, I've just been doing a podcast article on women in sport, so I'm spouting all these stats at the moment, John, but it also struck me that if viewers want to see rugby and boobs together, then you know what they should watch? Women's rugby, John. That is the solution. There's just been this huge influx of money for women's rugby. There's going to be a new global women's competition starting in 2023 with three global divisions. And then Mr. de Villiers and all his pals can get together and watch rugby played by people with breasts.
And moving on then to what do you do when your phone falls into water? You immediately put it into a container of rice.
Everyone knows that, right? Wrong. Wrong, John. I mean, what a wake-up call. I read this on The Conversation, so it was written by an actual academic in IT this week. Everyone thinks if your phone goes for a swim, you should put it in rice. That does not work. Instead, what you need to do is leave your phone in an airtight container full of silica gel packets. Those little packets you get inside new tackies or bags. I mean, I don't know who has a drawer full of silica gel packets, but start collecting them because this is what you need. You should also never use a hairdryer, which I know is another common technique used by people. Instead, what you should be using is a fan. But, John, I think that we've all learned quite a lot today, but most importantly, don't put it in rice.
Although I know a lot of people who claim that they have saved their phones by using the rice hack.
Perhaps their phones are not as badly damaged as they thought. Or perhaps, I mean, that's the only explanation I can find. This whole academic, John, says rice doesn't work. That's all I'm saying. Don't shoot the messenger. And
Somebody said to me over the weekend that they had for the first time listened to your podcasts, and Don't Shoot the Messenger is what the podcasts are called. I'm not quite sure why it took them so long, and they said it was absolutely brilliant, one of the best podcasts that they have ever heard, and they can't wait for future episodes.
Thank you so much, and I'd like to encourage listeners as well. They can get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, on the Daily Maverick website. Don't Shoot the Messenger. We really appreciate the support, and thanks for that, John.
More Plan B with Rebecca Davis next week.